Hello, I am Catherine Spires, and this is Smart Mouth. Please subscribe to our newsletter, written mostly by freelance contributors, at smartmouth.substack.com. We also have a fun private Facebook group, which you can find by searching Facebook for Smart Mouth, which is two words. Be sure to join the group and not the page. And we are also on Instagram at Smart Mouth Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Lobstergram. For over 30 years, it's been Lobstergram's mission to source the finest lobster, seafood, and steaks and deliver all of that direct to your doorstep. This holiday season, give the gift of experience, of memories, to your beloveds. Go to lobstergram.com/smartmouth and use the exclusive promo code SMARTMOUTHHOLIDAY, all one word, to get 20% off all products. Some restrictions apply. Now, on to the show. Steve Hernandez.
Hi, Catherine. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Of course.
I've known you for years.
I know.
It must be like getting low in the barrel.
That's what it is. Yeah, I was like, oh no, I don't have anyone else.
It's like, oh no. And then I listened too. So when you asked me, I was like, you've done all the foods. I mean, there's so many episodes.
I know. Actually, I kind of agree with you on that. And sometimes I have a hard time thinking, like, people will suggest some, like, six things, and I've done all of them.
Yes.
But then occasionally someone will say something, and I'm like, oh, now what about that?
It's a real thing. You know, I start, and I have so many podcasts all the time, but you always have to look at the thing and be like, can I do this for 500 episodes?
Right.
And this one, I don't. Maybe you didn't do that, or who knows?
I didn't think of it that way at all. Yeah. But the way that I do think of podcasting is that it can be totally experimental. And as far as I'm concerned, you can like change course after 3 years of doing it one way.
Oh, yeah. Amy Miller and I, who we co-host Who's Your God? It's a religion ethics podcast where we interview comedians about we talk about comedy a lot, but then we talk about how their experience with God and growing up. And then we ask them if they were to start their own church, would three tenants of that church be, mm-hmm. which is all fun. And that sounds pretty good. But I mean, we're running out of comedians that are willing and that can talk about this stuff in an interesting, articulate way. You know what I mean? There's tons of comedians, but most of them are dumbasses, you know, and they don't think about how they're living their life or have values or anything like that. So it's like, we are running out of comics.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. We'll figure, just like you said, we're trying to figure out other ways to change course and to be like, all right, how can we do it in a new way? So,
yeah. And you've got a lot going on anyway. You have other podcasts.
Yeah, I have a ton of things going on. It's so fun. I've got The Male Gaze, which is a weekly news one, and I have Views from the Vista, which is a movie one. I've got another one in the works that I'm not going to put these poor people through, okay? But I love podcasting so much. I've just got to figure out a way to make a living from it. Isn't that the kicker?
Yeah, no, that's the impossible part. But you do money jobs. You've been on corporate.
Oh, yeah, I get money. I have money, Catherine.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
No, my but God. My main money comes from bartending, which I bartend at the Chatterbox where I do my comedy show every week. And I bartend there on Thursdays and Fridays. And I make a decent living, artist living. Can't raise any damn kids. But, you know, my woman goes to Chili's, you know, sometimes. We go out to eat sometimes, you know. We've got our five or six little places. You'll find us at Pine and Crane, you know.
That's so nice. That's a nice little life.
Isn't it? I cannot complain. I'm not kidding you. Honor Nezzo is on my movie podcast, and she's also in a great pop band called The Beginners, And we were watching them in Orange County last Wednesday, and it was at the Wayfarer, and it was like 50, 60 people really rocking out, and they were killing it. And I was like, man, this is such a great life, like that we're just watching our friends do this stuff. If only like we can go to the dentist. I think that would be really cool.
God. Everything's so opposite. Does that make us the ultimate nerds? They're like, boy, if I could go to the dentist, that would just be the bee's knees.
No, I mean, I think it is just such a, because I do feel like, how many people in human history have experienced the luxuries that we have, right?
Right.
Like, truly. Like, I mean, you eat some of the best food all the time, the best food in the world at the highest point of the world. You have this nice, warm little place, and you have a beautiful little dog and everything. And it's like, oh, yeah, it sucks that we worry about health insurance and dentistry and stuff like that. But generally, if I were to get murdered today, what a life.
Right.
It is just this worry of retirement and dentistry. Like, dentistry could, like, really take you down, like, for 10 grand.
Yeah.
Like that. So, but, like, if euthanasia is legal by the time I'm 65, I will be so happy. Just, like, put me out, baby.
65? Yeah. That's still young.
I know, but what a life, right? You don't want to wait till you're that old. You want to be a young person. Yeah.
Go out on top.
Yeah.
All right. I guess I kind of get that. I do. I don't want to live forever. Are you going to eat onion dip every day for the rest of, like, once you know, you're like, okay, on September 15th, I'm killing myself.
You know, it's so funny that I don't really eat it except for family events because it's so, like, gross. Like, generally, I think it's kind of a gross thing. But I've told my partner, Julie, I've told her, yes, you know, like, she asked me one time, you know, what's your favorite food? Which is funny because when you asked me about foods, I was like, I can't think of anything. But it is onion dip. It is at our Thanksgiving and our Christmas, at Easter. My family, you know, pretty little by Mexican standards, but, you know, there's like 20 of us, 25 of us on my mom's side. We get the fattest thing of sour cream and a couple of those packets and two bags of, like, Lay's or Ruffles or something like that. And before the dinner, and then we all eat too much of this stuff. And we sit around the living room floor. I'm picturing it right now. We sit around the living room floor and we talk and we laugh and we have such a good time and eat a crap load of onion dip. It's honestly my favorite food ever. I've been filling up for my whole goddamn life on French onion dip.
I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, it's funny that you just called it French onion dip. That's the first time in our entire conversation leading up to this that you called it French onion
dip. It is called that, right?
Actually, no, but I thought it was French onion dip too.
Huh. Now, what do you think about French onion or onion dip?
I think it's delicious.
So you like it? How often do you eat it?
I think I've maybe had it twice in my life.
Oh, just in your life?
Yeah. My parents were hippies in different kinds of ways, and there was not a lot of processed food for me growing up. So I didn't really know about it, but some of my friends make it. I see it at parties. One thing I do notice, and I've noticed this cropping up in a couple ways recently, onion dip is one of those things that sometimes people will try and do, like, a homemade version of. But I don't know if that's necessary, because the real authentic onion dip is sour cream in a packet.
So that is the case.
Yes.
Because I did tell really you, I did is. Think this is some kind of German bullshit where, like, you know, or Hungarian, where they minced onions over some kind of soup thing and just mixed them together. But it's not.
No.
When was it invented?
In 1954. Yeah.
I hate this. I mean, I just feel like me and my Mexican family have been duped.
No, you're eating it exactly as you're supposed to be. And I do want to mention, too, that a couple of food publications have done taste tests between homemade and store-bought onion dip.
Yeah.
And store-bought always wins.
How would one make a homemade onion dip?
You caramelize the onions first. That's where you get most of the complex flavors. And then you just do, like, a couple more herbs. You're still doing the sour cream. You're just not pouring things out of a packet.
But there's just chunks of onion in there?
Smaller than chunks.
Okay.
I think you slice it. I mean, depending on your preferences, but I think you would at least chop the onion, if not dice it.
Yeah. Her eyes got really big on that one, folks. I did not see her eyes getting so big on the dicing. That does not sound as good as the powdered stuff.
Right. And I think that one thing that when we're thinking and not eating, we're like, oh, naturally, I'd like the fresh ingredients. But not necessarily.
Not in this particular instance, no.
Yeah.
I like that stuff.
Yeah. And you also got to figure that these foods... Now, onion dip was not created by Lipton. But Lipton, I think, probably changed the recipe to make it perfect for onion dip because it became their best-selling item for a long time. So companies like that have scientists on staff that they pay well to figure out how best to appeal to our taste buds. So it's like when people say something like McDonald's tastes disgusting. No, it doesn't. It's actually been engineered to appeal to us.
Yes.
You might just want to pretend you're better than it.
Yes. Comedian Robbie Hoffman, last night at the comedy show I did, you should go sometime. She has a joke about that, how she says McDonald's is the number one restaurant based on taste alone. I mean, let's just admit that. But it is. There's nothing like McDonald's It makes you feel like home, I guess. But if you didn't grow up on it, then it probably doesn't, right?
Right. It's probably very strange. Have you seen that gif of the baby who's far too young to be drinking soda? But I think it's a McDonald's soda. And she's probably 18 months old. And she takes a sip and her face scrunches up.
Yes.
And then her eyes roll back in her head. And then her head, it's practically like The Exorcist, how far back her head goes.
Yes.
And then as she comes back down and immediately takes another sip.
Yes. I love that gif. What do you stand on? I mean, as someone who, you didn't grow up here, you came from Seattle. What do you think of In-N-Out? Because I do think In-N-Out's the same way.
I love In-N-Out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good.
I do.
Because I thought it was maybe nostalgia.
Right.
But it's not.
No, I think that it's genuinely good for people who like that kind of burger. A lot of people like the bigger, obviously grilled kind of burger. So it's a very California type of burger. Not everyone likes that. I do. Their fries are trash. Obviously.
We'll disagree on that.
So hummus has been around forever.
Yes. Are we doing just chips and dip?
No, I thought about doing chips and dip, but then it became too much. So I'm just leading up to onion dip with the other dips.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't have hummus until maybe 10 years ago, 12 years ago.
Oh, really?
And it was Trader Joe's.
Okay.
But that, I mean, yes, go on. I love it.
I don't really like, I only like hummus, I have found, if it's like just been made, like the very freshest, and about 2 hours after it's been made, I don't like it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you got that kind of quality about you where the thing has to be fresh and just well made, you know, highfalutin.
I'm so highfalutin.
Well, you've only had onion dip twice. Give me a break.
I know. No, yeah. I am. It's fair. But the thing about calling hummus a dip is that we don't actually know how it was eaten in ancient times. Maybe it was a spread, or maybe it was put on meat or something like that.
When was the resurgence? Or did it never went away? Or I mean, you say we don't know how they ate it, but
in ancient times.
Oh.
Like there aren't any like cave paintings.
I mean, hummus has been around that long?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I've never thought about it.
I mean, it's just smushed up beans and oil. So
yeah. I mean, but still, that's wacky.
Yeah. No, it is. It is. Actually, we could probably do a whole episode on how it became a popular, like the most popular thing in America. In some places.
Oh, yeah. Remember that. Let's table that.
Yeah. So I read something that said salsa has been made in America since the early 1800s. But if you're talking about the early 1800s, I was like, what's America?
Yes.
So I don't know that we can claim that.
So you're doing chips and dip. You said you weren't going to.
I could tell you the history of chips, and I'm not going to.
But you, okay, so we've gone to hummus, we're going to salsa.
Uh-huh.
Which I think chips and salsa are the best too, right?
Yeah, it's popular for a reason. And starting in the 1990s, salsa became the number one selling condiment in the United States.
Surpassing ketchup,
which is what everyone freaked out about because they're like, the ultimate white condiment has been bested.
Yes.
Salsa isn't number one anymore, but that's probably because of market diffusion. There's just too many options.
Can you look into this some point too for future episode, or you know, just as friends, you could text me about it. Because I have wondered, why did ranch take off in the mid-90s or early 2000s? Because it wasn't that big of a deal when I was a kid, I remember.
But it was a big deal in other parts of the country. You were raised in California, and I really do think that once people started moving to different cities a lot, like regularly, ranch came with them. Ranch has always, since the 1950s, been an important part of Midwestern culture. We just didn't know about it on the West Coast.
Oh, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But it just makes sense. So the ranch went with even the country growing in size. So, because, I mean, you couldn't ask for ranch at a restaurant in 1995.
Yep.
Maybe out here, but out there you can, you said?
Yeah, and you can. But it's also been going on for a few generations that women carry ranch with them in their purses in the Midwest. That's a real true thing.
Oh, my God. Well, Hillary would not have won on that. Let me tell you that much. Well, actually, maybe she would have.
I know, maybe.
Yeah, maybe she would have.
Yeah, hot sauce was too
much.
That's
what you get for appealing to the Mexicans, okay? Hillary, you're always going to lose when you bet on us. We are a fickle folk.
So we've mentioned briefly hummus and salsa, but I really think the important thing here is the dairy-based dips. That's really what we're talking about.
And it can't be that old because things had to be refrigerated, right?
Well, I think people, this is going to sound like I'm being sassy, but I think people made smaller servings back in the day.
Oh, what the fuck does that mean, Catherine? She actually made a tubby thing. She like put to her, made her stomach big with her arms and then blew up her face.
Don't tell people that.
And she pointed at me too, as if there was anyone else around, as if I didn't understand. She was making a huge fat joke at me.
How dare you?
Yes.
I would never.
So, I mean, just a handful of this stuff?
Yeah, you just make a small amount. But also, things like sour cream, they're slightly fermented. They do last a little bit longer. The type of sour cream that we eat, it comes from sort of an Eastern European tradition, but every people who have cows do something like it.
Huh.
You just, every dairy product except for milk is like trying to make it last longer. That's
yeah,
where
so
it comes
yogurt
from.
And sour cream and yeah. stuff like that. Oh, that yeah. makes sense. Yes.
And most of these dips are sour cream based, but you sometimes see people making them with cream cheese. For instance, Woodrow Wilson's wife, one of her, like, she had these recipe cards that became famous, and apparently President Wilson's favorite dish was clam and cream cheese dip. Clam dip.
I mean, I guess that could be good, right?
Right. Yeah. It sounds gross to me, but people love this sort of thing. And you do it with canned clams, the cream cheese, grated onions, salt, and pepper.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it probably is.
Have you had when people do the cream cheese with the salsa?
Yeah.
I can't believe that, how good that stuff is.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a really good combo. And do you watch Queer Eye at all?
I don't. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, there's this big thing where
I do suck. You know, I do get down like that occasionally, though.
Thank you for cleaning that up a little bit.
Well, I don't need to watch it because I do it. Okay. I don't want these people to think that, you know, I'm worried about haircuts or clothing or anything. I'm out there sucking the D. I'm doing the work of the fellas. Okay.
Steve.
I didn't say the D word. I hope that helps, but I think they would beep sucking too if we were on TV. Yeah,
I think so. No, the food guy on that put dairy product in the guacamole, and everyone freaked out at him.
Yeah,
but I know that people do that. That's a thing that really does happen.
So, what did he put in there?
Well, what he chose was offensive. He chose Greek yogurt because it's lower in calories, But I've definitely seen sour cream mixed into guacamole before.
I've seen that too.
Yeah.
I think it probably makes it taste better, right?
It makes it taste different, certainly. Yeah. And some people like it better. It's also an extender.
Huh.
That was kind of the thing that I got mad about, people being like, ugh, disgusting. He put it in the guacamole. Yeah, it makes it essentially makes it cheaper. A lot of people do that.
Oh, yeah. That's a great point.
Yeah.
And then also out here, we have we're in Los Angeles, so we have access to so many great, cheap avocados.
Yeah.
But in New York, one dinky avocado is $5 or $6. So, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
I thought so. So this was in the, oh my God, President Wilson was a president in the 20s?
Yes.
But she was kind of a front runner on this because dips weren't hot. Until the 1940s and 50s. That's really when they had their peak.
Now, this seems like the time where the idea of cocktail parties kind of kicked off as well, right?
That's absolutely correct.
Yes.
And because of when we say cocktail party, the vision that we all have in our heads, that is when that kind of cocktail party started. That is when informal entertaining started.
Oh, I didn't even think that was a thing.
Yeah.
Of course, because yes, I guess people, go on.
America changed so much, and yeah. It was like the growing middle class, so fewer people had servants. So for some people, it was like that necessitated having sort of like smaller parties or like buffet dinners instead of sit-down dinners that are served by your servants, because fewer people had those. But then also with the whole post-war boom, more people were buying bigger standalone houses. So you could have more people in. Also, a thing that became desirable, the media really presented this as desirable, was having a backyard.
That is so funny. I guess nobody cared before, right?
Well, it wasn't. I mean, if you live in New York City or if you lived in the country, you were on a farm. But it's the suburbs. It's the middle class. It's the having the quarter acre of your domain. That's all yours.
That is so funny. You know, it's being from Los Angeles, and I remember being young, and the idea of living in an apartment was always like, oh, you don't have much money.
Uh-huh.
Or, that's just what I remember thinking. We lived in an apartment till I was 5. I grew up in Lincoln Heights, Highland Park area, and then we moved to West Covina to a home. But, I remember hearing New York, they would talk about apartments. I was like, sheesh, these poor schmucks, you know? I was like, ugh, get a yard already, you know?
Yeah.
We're killing it over here in West Covina.
See, you bought into the American
dream.
Yeah,
I did.
Also, grilling became super big. Like, in all the lifestyle magazines would do features.
I'm seeing all the pictures. Right? You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
I'm seeing all the pictures in my head in the backyards of men grilling.
Mm-hmm. And theme parties and
yes,
such.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. Everybody, I have a holiday suggestion for you. It's Lobstergram, which is a seafood delivery service. Here's how it works. You browse the delicious, the impressive selection of seafood, and you place your order online. You schedule your delivery date for tomorrow, a week from now, months from now, up to you. And your order, along with your Lobstergram cooking guide, is priority shipped to you on the date you requested. We're always hearing that millennials prize experiences over things, and as an elder millennial, I can confirm that this is true. So give the gift of experience, of memories, and not just to the 20 and 30-somethings in your life, really, to anyone you know. Some favorites to try include Maine lobster tails, live Maine lobster dinners, the Maine Shore clam bake gram, and, of course, the classic seafood tower. Go to lobstergram.com/smartmouth and use the promo code SMARTMOUTHHOLIDAY to take 20% off all products. That's SMARTMOUTHHOLIDAY at lobstergram.com/smartmouth. Some restrictions apply. And of course, along with people buying bigger houses and entertaining in their own homes more, they had to buy more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Furniture, and then also food, because you've got the big refrigerators now and the garage freezers. So of course, the government and industry love that too.
It's so funny that the American dream, this is what you're talking about basically, lasted about 60 years.
Yes.
Which is nothing. Truly nothing.
Truly.
And in the course of history, you don't even have to think universally, but 60 years is nothing. But because of the things you're talking about, we all had it in our minds. So they were able to do it. Their kids were able to do it. And now we're effed.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was, I mean, it sounds like you're kidding when you're like, oh, I think it was really selfish of them to all buy their own houses. Because obviously it was, but no one was thinking of it that way. It was self-determination.
Yeah, and they didn't think it would. They thought there was enough to go around.
Or didn't care.
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
You know, people do say that boomers are a, well, I got mine type of generation. So you buy your own house, you're not worried if anyone else bought a house.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's America baked into its core has this manifest destiny bullshit. So they believe God wanted us to have all of these things too. So yeah. And eat all this meat and everything, which... Do you ever feel guilty about eating meat? Is it starting to like get to you?
No, not starting to. I try to be thoughtful about it. It's very hard to, but I don't think that being a vegetarian or a vegan in and of itself is morally superior, because you can be lots of vegans eat things made with palm oil, and that's killing Indonesia and making it so that the orangutans are almost extinct. If you're a pescatarian, you're not eating red meat, so you're saving some animals, but a lot of fish seafood products have, like, they have slaves on the boats. So it's more about, like, if you're gonna eat fish, you have to make sure that it's like wild caught from an American run company. And if you're gonna eat meat, it's cool to have it try and be from a place that does grass fed. I think that the reason why it's hard for people to care is because once you start caring, there's a million issues that pop up.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all really busy, and it's hard to like sit there and be like, well, do I eat chocolate still? Do I eat almonds?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. So I guess we just have to be more thoughtful and mindful about all the things. But we all know that most of the pollution is coming from corporations anyways.
Yeah.
So I guess just to not give in to that hopelessness of all that kind of thing.
Well, it's weird because I don't feel personally guilty anymore. We were raised when recycling was pushed on us all the time, which made it seem like it was our fault if the world ended. But now that we know that it's corporations, I'm like, well, I guess we're just going to die. Die of pollution.
Yeah, they're not going to stop.
No.
Yeah.
No, they're definitely not. So not only was it all this entertaining culture stuff, but it also was, post-World War II, a focused push on the part of the military and industry to get civilians to eat all of the dehydrated food product that they had made for soldiers.
Because of a surplus?
A surplus, but also less that and more that the factories had been set up to make these things and they just want to keep making it, and they can make a bigger profit off of it once civilians are buying it as well as the U.S. military.
I mean, why are you doing this to me, Catherine? I'll never eat dip again.
I'm so sorry. Way.
But I was thinking, I was anticipating this episode, and I was thinking those packets are $2 or $3 a piece. Uh-huh. I mean, they must cost nothing to make, right?
Yeah.
Like truly, it must cost like 3 pennies to make that stuff.
Probably. Yeah. Oh, it's outrageous.
God. Yeah.
If anyone wants to know like a lot more about military food and how we eat, please listen to the TV Dinners with Drew Mackey episode. We go in deep.
I'll go back and do that.
Okay.
Drew's looking great lately.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's having a fun time.
Yeah. Real beefy, real sexy. I like it.
Yeah.
If you're listening, Drew, loving it. Love the stash.
He loves his beefy sexiness as well. He didn't know he'd be into it. And it turns out he is. And he appreciates it in other people now, too. Anyway, that's just if anyone, like, has been noticing Drew's social and, like, wants to... I don't know. So, apparently, of all the dehydrated products, the dehydrated soup was the most successful. Which explains why people were buying onion soup packets in the first place. So, there's this guy named James Beard. Are you familiar with that name?
Of the awards?
Yes.
Yes.
Of the awards. So, of course, a legend in the food world. And he wrote a book, a cookbook in 1940 called Hors d'oeuvres and Canapés. And he said, I think it delightful to have large bowls of cheese mixtures, which are of a consistency that permits dunking in quote marks. Cream cheese mixed with chopped onions, sour cream, perhaps a little green pepper, parsley, roquefort, gorgonzola. Like he like lists all these different things. He's listing all these dips, but he says these are all good dunkers.
I love this so much. I love the idea of him saying dunk. Do you dunk?
Yeah.
Do you even dunk, fool? Just dunking on chips and dip? That's so... I'm going to start saying it this year. Thanksgiving's next week. I cannot wait.
It's going to be so great.
Do you even dunk? Or like, you just got dunked on full. I'm going to push my cousin out of the way. Dunk a chip. I love this, man. I'm stoked.
He also said, to continue in the theme, you may have your choice of dunkers. Potato chips, pretzels, crackers, Italian breadsticks, any of them. So you can go crazy on this. In other cookbooks, let's call them the sauces, they were called dunks. And the items used to scoop up the dunk was the dip.
Oh, interesting. Which makes sense.
It does. And I also know that I brought this up on a recent episode and I don't remember which one it was, but I'm glad that I found like primary source, real proof that I was right. This is a thing. It used to be switched a lot where you would put your dip in the dunk.
You're doing the dipping.
Yes.
Yes, that makes sense.
Totally. Yeah. The Woman's Home Companion Cookbook, written in 1940, has actual eating instructions.
Well, I mean, people were still more proper there and everything too, right?
Well, I think that they were learning how to be casual.
Oh, okay.
So they would say, make your dunk and then put it in a bowl and on a bigger plate, surround it with potato chips. And then the guests use the potato chips as scoops to dip into the spread.
Huh.
Yeah, a little instruction. This is my favorite from a book in 1947. Written from women for women. Give a man a bit of something crisp and a bowl of something spicy to dip in it, and you don't need the services of a cook or a kitchen girl.
Just keep us busy.
Yeah, totally. Oh, so, and then they listed all the things that you could put into a spread, and then they say, every man has his own dunker. So every man gets his own bowl.
Oh, okay. I thought they meant, you know, inside their heart, they have a particular
probably,
kind of
yeah. With a big platter of vegetables, give him a choice of dunks and let him play. We've always been treating men like small children.
Oh, I know. Well, we are imbeciles. There are times I like to think when I'm upset at work, I've had like, I always bartend with a woman on Fridays. I've been bartending there for 12 years, so I've had like 3 partners essentially, and we're obviously all get very close. But if I found that if I get like heated, like mad about something, and then my partner just like rubs my back for a little bit, it like literally calms me down.
Oh,
and
Steve.
I go, oh my God, I'm such a moron. Like I'm such an ape, animal, orangutan. Can you imagine? Just the rubbing of a woman on my back calms me down. What a loser.
So simple.
Exactly. It's like, give me a break. What a...
That's ridiculous, Steve. Oh my goodness. So they had all these dunk recipes that were really not recipes. Tomato dunk, which is tomato soup and cream cheese. French dunk, prepare yourself. Cottage cheese and mayonnaise.
Ooh.
Right? That's pretty dire.
That tomato soup and cream cheese sounds pretty good maybe, though.
Yeah, that kind of just sounds like grilled cheese and tomato soup, right? Like, yeah. It's the same elements. But then they would just, like, call them by the colors. Like, pink dunk was mayonnaise and ketchup.
Oh.
Whereas red dunk is mayonnaise and cocktail sauce.
I mean, you know, we dunk on mayo a lot in this country, but it's pretty good when you go other places, I found. But it's a different consistency, too. I do think it's interesting on these two sources that it's just like a given that we're going to call these things dunks.
Yeah.
And we're going to dunk it.
Still with the instructions, though. Guests dunk their own.
Yeah.
Don't do it for them.
Don't be dunking for your guests, yeah, you know?
Exactly.
Feeding them, basically.
Your favorite is onion dip. It used to be called California dip. Did you know that?
No, but I sensed it.
Did you sense it?
How much I loved it. Me and my family loved it.
Yeah, it straight up was invented in California. And it's weird because there's actually a graph of this, of onion dip versus California dip. People calling the same thing different names. And so in the 60s, some people started calling it onion dip. And then I guess the item itself got more and more popular because both onion dip and California dip went up in usage. And then in the early 90s, people just stopped saying California dip.
So as far into the 80s, people said California dip?
Yeah.
Stuff? Wow, that's so interesting.
Yeah, because I'd never heard of that.
Nope, never heard of it.
Uh-uh. So they don't know. The reason it was called California dip is because the recipes, like in newspapers and stuff, started coming out of California. And no one was ever credited with it, but it was just someone who mixed onion soup mix with sour cream. And so it took Lipton a while to sort of catch on to the fact that this was popular. But once they did, they launched this huge campaign. They sponsored radio shows and TV shows. You know, back in the day when it was like every TV show had one sponsor.
Yeah, Lipton's the Comedy Hour.
Exactly, that sort of thing. And then in 1958, they started printing the recipe on every packet and box of soup
that
mix.
That is so funny.
Because it apparently became the number one reason why people were buying it.
Because of the recipe?
Well, because of the dip, not the soup.
Oh,
they were buying it for dip.
Yeah.
They were still calling it California dip at that point, though. And they started making all these different spinoffs that you could make. California dip deviled eggs. You could do that. You could do California dip a la Grec, California dip Mexicano.
What's that?
They probably just like put cumin in it or something. And then they would try and use it in recipes too. Spaghetti Bravissimo. That was a recipe that incorporated
that
onion
gross.
Dip. Acapulco quesadillas.
That sounds good.
Delish kebabs.
Nope.
Pago pago tidbits.
I'm on the fence.
Yeah, fair. But it's weird because this is just the American version, because concurrently in New Zealand, Nestle, with their onion dip, they came up with the same idea. Sorry, with their onion soup mix, came up with this idea. One of their test kitchen employees, Rosemary Dempsey, in the early 60s, she was working for Nestle and developed this use for it, just doing the onion soup mix and reduced cream. And it was really hard for me to find out what the hell reduced cream is, because on the internet, all it will tell you is it's not thickened cream. And I don't know what thickened cream is.
So it's just probably some in between liquid cream and what we think of as sour cream.
I finally found something that might be right on the New Zealand subreddit.
Okay. Catherine, I'm sorry I made you do this.
It sounds like it's kind of like half creme fraiche, half mascarpone, or like a more lemony sour cream.
That sounds great.
Yeah. Totally. So that was just in New Zealand, huh? Because Lipton, only in last year, sold 58 million packets of onion soup mix.
So 58 million?
Packets, yeah.
Oh my God.
I know. That's way too much. I've got a question for you. Listen to this recipe and see what you think of it. Caramelized onions, garlic confit, creme fraiche, hot sauce, soy sauce, Worcestershire sauce, pepper, chives, and fried shallots.
That's probably great.
Right. But do you think it's onion dip? Like, does that count as onion dip?
I guess we'd have to taste it, right?
Well, yes. But I almost think that if you're getting that fancy with it, you should call it something else.
It depends what it tastes like. If it tastes like onion dip, and because I don't know what's in the packet, do you?
No, that's true.
That's what I'm saying. It's not like it's not like I taste that powder. I'm like, ah, it's just like mom made, you know? we don't know. So if it tastes like it, and I, when you were saying all those ingredients too, I was thinking about them mixed all together, and I was like, yeah, that's possible. That tastes like what we think of as onion dip.
Yeah, but like more so. I think that goes back to the whole blind taste test thing.
You said it. You said the powdered stuff is better. Yeah. I mean, I love it. That's the kind of thing where it's like hard to knock it. And also it becomes its own. It's its own thing also. Like mac and cheese. I've had fancy mac and cheese, but Kraft mac and cheese is still its own thing.
Yeah.
So when I say I want mac and cheese, it's not the same thing.
Right.
Kraft mac and cheese is its own very own thing. I like that other shit too, but it'll never, they're not even competing as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I just don't think that they should call it onion dip.
Oh, it's just a personal thing.
Yeah, it's real personal with Tom. So I guess each region of the U.S. has dips and dunks that are most popular in those regions that other people don't eat as much. Crab dip?
I've never had it, but I've heard about it for years.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had it either. Apparently, it is strongest on the East Coast. Crawfish dip, New Orleans.
Yeah.
Probably very similar thing. Something that, I don't know, this sounds like a joke because people are always making fun of Midwestern food, but pickle wrap dip?
I think I might have had this before. What does it consist of?
Food.com says that it has cream cheese, chopped beef, and diced pickles.
That sounds awesome.
And it's actually like beef from a can. Not like beef you cooked and chopped up, like the chopped beef can product. And it specifies, serve it with Ritz crackers.
Yeah, I think that sounds very good. I think the ingredients, it sounds a little weird, but I've dated a woman from the South.
Yeah.
And that tastes like something I've had before.
Okay.
With cream cheese and pickles.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And ham, rolled ham.
Ugh, get ham away from me. I do not care for that. This one sounds like a joke. Also, Vermont has maple bacon dip. Like, that's a little too on the nose.
What do you dip in it?
Like just crackers, but...
Yeah, no thanks.
Yeah, that makes me kind of feel gross too. And then smoked salmon dip, popular in the Pacific Northwest. That's dumb because that's kind of like... there's a lot of schmears made with smoked salmon.
Yeah,
that's I don't think that's a Northwestern thing.
I don't know. That sounds good.
It sounds good.
Yeah.
But you're not going to like try and mix it up this Thanksgiving or Christmas.
Oh, it's so funny. You think I'm kidding. I'm not kidding.
I don't think you're kidding. I know
you think I'm kidding, but I'm thinking about Thanksgiving and I like honestly cannot wait to just dip it up to dunk.
Why do you think I think you're kidding?
I don't actually, you're not. I don't think that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I take this very seriously, but I do because food memories are an important part of what makes it someone's favorite food.
Yeah, it is funny, though, that I don't really just make... I wouldn't make it at home just, like, as a treat.
You gotta save it special.
Yes. And it's one of the few things, especially, you know, we're older. We're all grown-up kids out here eating whatever the heck we want, whenever we want. But I'd still, like, would never just, like, pound a thing of sour cream with that stuff. But I don't mind doing it on the holidays. It's gonna be great. I can't wait.
That's awesome. Steve, remind people what all of your podcasts are.
Religion podcast is called Who's Your God with Amy Miller. My movie podcast is called Views from the Vista with Zed Kutzinger and Anna Nezzo. And then The Male Gaze is a weekly news show hosted with Alan Strickland Williams, Brody Reed, and Zed Kutzinger. You can find me every Sunday at the Chatterbox in Covina. It's one of the best shows in Los Angeles, worth the drive. Only a half hour outside of LA proper. And
you can find me
at Big Hearn on Twitter. Hernie on Instagram. Thank you so much for having me, Kathy.
Thank you. Let me tell you about a place somewhere up in New York way where the people are so gay, twisting the night away. Here they have a lot of fun, putting trouble on the run. Man, you find the old and young, twisting the night away. They're twisting. Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening. I will now cite my sources. I got general information from the Oxford Companion to American Food and Drink and a book called The Story Behind the Dish, Classic American Foods. The American Century Cookbook contained Woodrow Wilson's favorite clam dip recipe. And I quoted the Good Housekeeping Cookbook, as well as the 60 Minute Chef and the Woman's Home Companion Cookbook. And of course, Hors d'oeuvres and Canapés by James Beard. I used something called the Google Ngram Viewer. That's where I found the statistics about California dip versus onion dip usage. Bon Appetit did a homemade versus store-bought onion dip taste test. And Food 52 had a great history piece that I used a lot. A publication called The Southern Illinoisan had an article about regional dips. And a New Zealand website called The Spinoff tracked down the inventor of their onion dip, the Kiwi onion dip. And then a New Zealand subreddit, well, I think the New Zealand subreddit, taught me about reduced cream. And finally, per usual, foodtimeline.org was a great help. All these links can be found in the show notes. This episode was brought to you by Lobstergram. For over 30 years, it's been Lobstergram's mission to source the finest lobster, seafood, and steaks, and then deliver all that direct to your door. This holiday season, give the gift of experience and of memories to your beloveds. Go to lobstergram.com/smartmouth and use the promo code SMARTMOUTHHOLIDAY to take 20% off all products. Some restrictions apply. SmartMouth is a production of Table Cakes, a woman-owned Los Angeles-based podcast company. SmartMouth is hosted and produced by me, Catherine Spires, and engineered by Mika Grimm. Check out all of our shows at tablecakes.com. Happy Thanksgiving! Give back stolen land! A Table Cakes production.